are we, but you know what? We're not being paid for this. We do this for free. If you're being paid...
if you're being paid, slow it down.
I swear I blinked. And then I was like, wait, how did we get here? How is Wolverine on the top of the trolley? Like, what is going on?
My main question, why do we care about this? Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, I feel like this is 3 years in the making. It is the much anticipated episode of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. A very, like, we'll give the heads up immediately at the start of this episode. There will be spoilers. So, like, if you have not seen Cursed Child, if you are, you don't think there's going to be spoilers? I think there's going to be
spoilers. There will be spoilers. But what I'm saying is it's come out, it premiered in London, I believe, in 2016.
And also, like, the script exists. It's been out.
The script exists. Yeah. So yeah. We want to be free to truly discuss what the show's about.
I more so mean like spoilers in terms of like I want to talk about some mechanics of the trick. So like if you're not, if you haven't seen it yet and like that's something that you are interested in, like maybe skip this episode and come back. Also, before we jump in, happy Halloween, everybody.
I know.
Today is Halloween, Halloween. So happy Halloween.
I am wearing my Keep the Secrets button that was distributed after part one in
London.
So
you are not following
I'm not keeping the secrets. But I do have my Keep the Secrets button from 4.5 years ago. So,
So Steph, you are going to lead this episode as I would say, like the main Harry Potter fan in this conversation right now. And also the person that's seen Cursed Child, both versions.
Twice.
Which I don't know that there are that many of you out there that have seen both versions.
I'm sure there are a lot, but I'm sure there's
in
enough.
Toronto specifically? I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe probably not. Maybe probably not in Toronto. The interesting thing about Toronto is that we're talking about this with Robert Marcus a bit, that like 85% of the market in Toronto for theater goers is locals. Whereas in a lot of other markets, it's predominantly majority tourists. So you're kind of hitting a different demographic in Toronto than you're hitting other places. So what I want to start with is what is like your experience with Harry Potter, your background with Harry Potter?
No one come for me, but I've not read a single book. I am a, in many things, I'll wait for the movie type of person. And it was no different for the Harry Potter series. I have seen every single movie. I did go to like almost all of those midnight premieres whenever they happened when the movies were released. And my brother, Corey, was always a huge fan, same with my mom, of the books. So I've also been to many a midnight book release, even though I have not read the books, but I've been like along for the ride. Now that being said, I know I'm missing out on like the true magic of the books, but I have seen those movies like many, many times. I love those movies. I think the entire like world of Harry Potter is amazing. I don't love the like Fantastic Beasts side of the Harry Potter world. And I also don't love the Cursed Child side of the Harry Potter world. So I feel like I am like a Harry Potter movie purist, and like
a movie purist.
But I also feel like, and I'm just like thinking about this right now, should we like sort ourselves in this episode? Because I've never been sorted.
You've never been sorted?
No.
I mean, it's been years since I took the Pottermore quiz, but I have obviously been sorted.
Someone told me the other day that I was a Hufflepuff, and I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
I think you could be a Hufflepuff. I think Hufflepuffs are very kind, but I feel like a lot of people say Hufflepuff when they don't quite know where to put someone.
Oh, so a cop out. So maybe we'll come back at the end of the episode and we'll do the quiz.
maybe we'll do the quiz. Okay, now I'm going to talk about my experience with Harry Potter, which is probably more similar to your brother's. I was probably read the first, when I started reading them, I think the fourth book was out. I would have been around 8 years old. So I read 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they truly are the books that made me love reading. I remember reading the second book, which, and for like a 7, 8 year old, that was like really traumatizing when my favorite ever character, Hermione, was petrified. She was a character I like very much related to. Our hair textures are quite similar. And also like she was like smart and like annoyingly smart, which is how people described me at the time, maybe. So that was like very relatable to me. So when she was petrified, I just had to put the book down and cry. It was so emotional for me at the time. So yeah, I was around 8 when I first read those, and then I was followed the releases of 5, 6, and 7, and I was about, I don't even know when 7 came out, but probably like 13 or 14 when the 7th book came out, and I loved those books. I still do. There was a time when I had read them, I don't even know, countless times, so many times, over and over and over again, could quote, could recite, and of course I've seen all the movies many a time. I've tried to make friends watch them. I've really followed along. I was on MuggleNet as a child.
I should also add that I have been to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in both Florida and California many times. Oh,
and California. Okay, I've only been in Florida, and I was with you. Yes. But...
And also, you did the Warner Brothers, like, London tour, right?
No.
You never did it?
No, I did not.
Oh my god, you didn't do the studio tour?
No, it's like a whole day, like, excursion.
It is a whole day, but, like, London. I can't believe you didn't do it.
I was with Char my, the last time we were there. I know. Last time I was there, I was with my parents, and they were like, we're not doing this. And also, I feel like that was fair. We didn't have the time.
Yeah. Well, the funniest thing about that experience is that, like, Char and I kind of, like, raced through it, which is not the right way to do that. We were probably there for, like, 2 hours, whereas, like, Corey went, and he was on, like, a solo trip, and he was there for, like, 5 hours. So, like, that's the correct way to do it.
I did go to an exhibit of it that was at, do you remember at the Science Center?
Oh, yeah.
I went to that.
I almost went to one in, it was the same exhibit they were doing it in New York one time when I was in New York, but like it was sold out, so we didn't go.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I went, I think I was probably in high school when it came, just basically movie props and stuff. Yeah. It was at the Science Center here in Toronto, so I went to that. So really, really loved these movies. They were a huge part of my childhood, as I'm sure many people in our age group, our generation, can say. They were the books that made so many people of our age group like fall in love with reading and become readers. Mm. And I think the number one strength of these books was world building, the creation of this world that felt so immersive and so real. And I mean, that's what the magic with like fantasy books, and that's why they hit so like people connect so much to these books, but the world building is wonderful. So when they announced that a play was going to be created from this, they were actually very cagey, I feel, about what this play was going to be, whether it was going to be a prequel or a sequel, what characters were going to be in it. I felt until it opened, I didn't even know whether it was before or after the series taking place. How do you feel? Like, do you remember what information we knew before the play premiered?
Something that's, like, vivid to me, and this is also because, like, I'm a fonts person, which sounds weird, but, like, I'm very specific on certain fonts. And I remember that when it was announced that there was a Harry Potter play in the works, it wasn't the movie fonts. So no. I knew that Warner Brothers was, like, not a part not of it. Yeah. So that was like the one thing I very much remember. It's changed because now it's the like movie font, Harry Potter. So like it's definitely different.
I wonder what it's like in London now.
It is changed because the outside of the theater now has a different font, and they also changed it in New York. So there was a time period when like network changes were happening. Warner Brothers was like buying the rights to like certain things, and Cursed Child became one of the things that they bought the rights to. I also feel like it's important to say, yes, J.K. Rowling is a part of this, but there's many issues with J.K. Rowling, and many things that I can speak for both of us don't agree with her at all in life, in anything. So when we speak on things about like this, it's not that like we're crediting the mastermind of J.K. Rowling, but...
I mean, here's what I'll say. Like, these books connected with people for a reason. And I think to, like, discredit that this...
Oh, these, 100%.
These books were... I think there's, like, a weird thing that happens when, you know, someone does something that you don't like. You're like, well, I never liked them anyway, or they were bad the whole time. They weren't. They just also happened to suck a little bit as a human being. Or, you know, you can have this great art, but this thing that you really loved, and also have to like contend with the conflicting emotion of this person who created it is saying and believing these things that I wholeheartedly disagree with. And I do think it does like tarnish a bit the legacy of these books. I mean, something that, like, these books were about, like, being good in the face of evil, to simplify it, to, like, fight for what you believe in, to fight against hatred, I always felt. And then for the author of them to kind of spout hatred online repeatedly is very upsetting. So that's that, I guess.
I think it will come up again when we start to talk about, like, plot and, like, some of the changes. And I wonder if some of the changes had anything to do with, like, the news. But yeah, other than that, I really, again, same as you, I remember reading that, like, there's a Harry Potter play in the works, but the thing that stuck out to me, like, the most for years was that it's, like, it's not the movie font, so it's not the same, like, it's franchise per se.
We'll actually get into that soon too, because I think that's really interesting stuff. The kind of rights issues with this play. When I was walking by the theater with my mom when we were in New York, we had a conversation about how the house logos are different. The sorting hat is different. The dark mark is different. Because I remember saying, I remember the green dark mark. But it turns out I actually didn't remember the green dark mark. I just projected the iconic image of the dark mark from the movie onto the, like, less effective image of the dark mark in the play. And I just misremembered it. It's so interesting that they clearly did not have the collaboration with Warner Brothers when they created this, so they had to create an entire new visual language for this show. And so that a part of that is the music, part of that is the imagery, even, you know, what the characters look like. They can only go off of what was described in the books. They can't go off of what is depicted in the movies. So I think it does create almost a jarring sense of not rightness. And that's not the play's fault in any way, but it does kind of contribute to how effective it is that they're not able to use the iconic images that we associate with Harry Potter in this play. So yeah, so I also remember the first night, the first preview in London, 6-ish years ago, going on Tumblr and trying to read a summary of what this play was about.
Tumblr.
Tumblr, remember that? What a time.
The good old days.
The good old days. Those were the days. trying to read a summary of what this play was about. And then, you know, it ending on a cliffhanger, obviously. And I remember talking to someone and they were being like, it's so stupid. It has a cliffhanger. I'm like, well, yeah, part two is going to be tomorrow. It's going to be two parts. Yeah. And then reading the summary the next day from the same Tumblr user, I had to go back to their page to, like, read what it was about. The same day, I believe, opening night is when they released this version of the script, which is the special rehearsal edition script, which is the version I have. I pre-ordered it before it came out, and then I didn't read it till yesterday. It's just been like...
But as discussed, it's been on many vacations. It's actually been a world traveler. And
it's been a world traveler. I've been very ambitious.
It's still in good condition.
It's actually not in bad condition at all. I'm very ambitious. I did, like, dog ear some pages yesterday to, like, try and remember like some things I wanted to talk about. But yeah, I did finish the whole thing yesterday. It's actually quite an easy read. It's about 300-ish pages. Because it's a script, it's, like, very spaced on the pages.
Is there, like, the cues of, like, entrances and exits and all that stuff too?
No, there's no cues. There's some stage direction, but not a huge amount of stage direction. I can't imagine this is the actual rehearsal script.
No, but for sure a script is much easier to read than, like, a novel.
Yeah, it just takes less time to read than a novel because the pages have no words on them. So it took me, I guess, maybe a little bit less time than it would take to have seen the two parts. Definitely less than the 5 hours. And then what I did was I put on the soundtrack and I tried to, like, correspond the scenes to the songs to, like, just try and get the experience. So that's that. So, and then I went and I wanted to see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and I wanted to go to London to see it. So in spring of 2018, or I guess earlier that year, I bought tickets to see it, all on a Wednesday, part one in the afternoon and part two in the evening, which I do think if you're seeing the two-part version, which you can only do, I believe, in London. I do think a one-day situation is the way to go, but it's not a problem if you go anywhere else, because it's just 3.5 hours, one shot. And so I wanted to see that two-part, so that's what I have my program from. You have to buy these in the UK, and I obviously had to buy it, and yeah, it was, I our seats were not amazing. The first time we saw it, we were quite high up. And I feel like it was an opera house. So it was like very long and tall and like narrow. That
also,
theater.
I would say if you've been to London like recently or whatever, if you've seen the theater scene, Cursed Child is like not on Theater Row. It's like kind
of
removed.
Yeah, it's in a different spot. It is like a different spot for sure. So I would say I actually had like quite a good experience with it the first time. I left part one. So if you don't know, I would hope most people do, but it was in two parts. You would go and see act one and act two, and then you would leave. We went and had dinner, and then we came back for part two, act three, and act four, basically. So I left part one being like, okay, this is fine. But then I left part two actually like really enjoying myself, really loving it, really feeling emotionally like touched by the story, like feeling like, okay, I think they like gave me as a Harry Potter fan like what I was looking for in part two.
Right.
So I left with like a positive feeling towards it. So when it was announced to be coming to Toronto, I don't even know when they announced this, 2019 sometime?
Yes. Probably. And it was two parts, the original announcement.
It was supposed to be two parts. I don't think, yeah, the plan for one part.
It was the pandemic that changed it. Do you remember? I remember so clearly. I don't know the month, but I remember there was a rumor that Cursed Child was being cut down to one part. And it was like, someone had started this rumor because of like all of the drama that was happening with J.K. Rowling. I was like, this is not why they're cutting it. There's obviously like a different reason why they're cutting it. But I think people just like to like tie things together when there's an opportunity to. And the rumor happened. And then like the Broadway World boards were crazy with people talking about like, what would they take out? Is it worth it to do this? Is this like a smart move? Whatever. And then it was announced first that Broadway was doing it. And then very soon after, it was that like everywhere else except for London would be following the same format as Broadway.
Yes, when Mirvish kind of re-announced that they were mounting Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, that the planned production was happening, they said with the new production, one-part production. I have many theories for why it's
why
one
it was
part.
Cut down.
And the number one theory, and it's not even a theory, is financial. It's always financial. Sure. Every reason for everything is financial. But I think when it's a two-part show, it cannot be an impulse purchase. No one is just being like, oh, you know what? I'll see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child and spend my entire day doing that. It can never
be an
impulse
purchase. Entire weekend, like a Saturday, Sunday. Yeah.
No, it would be two Saturdays, two on Sunday. It's a full day.
Right. Yeah. Or a Friday, Saturday you could do. Could you? Could you do Saturday night?
You would do two on Wednesday, a Thursday, Friday.
Thursday, Friday. Yeah.
Two on Saturday, two on Sunday. So they had Monday and Tuesday dark. I guess you could also make your own, like,
schedule
like you could do Wednesday matinee and a
but
Saturday night
could
if you wanted
you,
but
like
you
could
buy
you,
singles but you when could. I bought it you they like you bought them together you were in the same seat
imagine if you were like you know what I just prefer part two I'm just gonna go see part two one night
well I'm sure once you already saw it some people did like we were like I just want to see this part again I just want to see this part again so if, number one financial it makes it easier for someone to decide on a whim to go see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child versus having to really like plan your full day to go do it. Also, I mean, another reason they cut pricing, budget. So things that they cut, there were two child actors or two child performers, characters in the show. Cut.
Which if you've listened to many of our episodes before, you will know that a child performer is not just a child performer. You need like a supervisor with them. So
well,
that's
you need
an
multiples
extra person.
Of them.
Yeah. And then like, is there a tutor that's on set for them to do schooling? So like there's at least three or four people that come with every child
associated.
Actor.
Yeah. So there were scenes with like a young Harry Potter. That
we didn't need them.
Honestly, they were quite emotional.
We'll get to like our takes on Harry Potter later in this episode because we don't agree, but like maybe to you they were emotional.
Well, the thing is, right, maybe let's deal with it right now. The other child character cut was Lily, Harry and Ginny's younger daughter. She was like barely in the show anyway. She was not necessary.
I think
cut
they
her.
Just
Goodbye.
Like referenced her.
Yeah,
in
but
this,
she was
right?
there originally. It was that, originally like, a 40 person cast and now it's 36 people.
What's his name? What's his name? The kid? Ooh, I should know this. The main
Albus?
Kid? Yeah, Albus. I remember like when he was going to school, they were like, your sister something, and that was it. That was
she was she there was. Originally, and she's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's not necessary.
So I think the younger child, like the young Harry dream sequences, which is what they were. You would see him, like, waking up from a dream, and they would be when his scar was hurting. I think they didn't really move the story forward very much. Mm-hmm. But they did provide context for, like, who Harry is. Like, to me, Harry Potter is someone who went through a great, like, trauma. You're laughing, mm-hmm. but this is... You have to take this seriously if we're going to talk about this, okay? You, like, if you're going to... No, but I mean, like, as an audience member, let's say. Like, you just have to, like, kind of buy into all of
yes.
this.
Yes, yeah.
You know, Harry Potter is this, like, who's a teenage boy who went through this, like, horrible trauma. And as a... If you're seeing Cursed Child in this one-part version, you're just supposed to know this because... Mm. You've seen the movies or read the books. Whereas when you had the two-part version, you got to see bits and pieces of that childhood trauma that happened to him. And so you get a bit greater context for why he's struggling being a parent to a child because he was never properly parented or, like, loved as a child. So he's, like, working without a blueprint.
Yeah, like, that definitely makes sense to me. I just think that Harry is such a whiny character and always has been to me. So, like,
He was a traumatized boy. I also think, like, and this is another thing, like, adaptation of things is so hard. Adaptation is really difficult. And I think in these books, Harry is, like, a funny kid. Mm-hmm. Like, he's, like, sarcastic. He's funny. And you just don't have time for that in these movies that are just, like, Gotta hit this plot. Like,
yeah.
The character of Ron in the books, I always thought was, like, so funny and so, like, smart in a different way from, like, Hermione is smart, obviously. I thought he was, like, a really interesting character, like, really interestingly written. And then the movies kind of, like, zapped so much interesting from him. And then this play just, the characterization of Ron is so horrible. I feel, like, embarrassed for the actor having to play him. Because it's so bad.
The material that he's given to work with is just, like...
It's so bad.
Well, it's, like, it's the stereotypical version of Ron that,
like... Yeah, but he's not like that in the books. He's not.
No, and he's also, like, not really like that in the movie. This is terrible to say, but to me, this version of Ron is, like, the guy that's walking around at Universal Studios. Like, that's Ron.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I feel like Ron in the books is a very nuanced character. Maybe people are going to come for me, but I feel like he's a very nuanced character. He's a very, like, insecure person who, like, masks that with, like, sarcasm and humor. It's, like, why, like, him and Harry kind of get along. And, you know, everyone sees, like, Hermione's really smart and Harry's, like, you know, this, like, really important person to, you know, the world. He's a celebrity. But Ron is, like, strategic. He, like, sees the big picture. He's, like, good at magic because, like, he was born with magic. Like, he's a very interesting character to have. And then every time it gets adapted, like, just the core parts of his character get, like, stripped away. And you left with a guy making bad dad jokes. And I'm like, who even is this man? I don't recognize him.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And he also felt, like, so underdeveloped in this play that, like...
He's, like, a plot device in this play. He just, like, comes and, like, I don't know, blocks someone or...
If he wasn't there, I don't know that I would miss him.
No, I know. I agree.
Which is weird.
He's in the play because he's Ron, but not because he's moving the story forward. That's actually a huge problem with this whole play, is that, like, nothing is really moving the story forward. Like,
also, like, before we, like, deep dive into this, I feel like we need to focus. If you have not read the fourth book or seen the fourth movie, so much of this plot means absolutely nothing to you.
If you're not a Harry Potter fan, like, I don't think you should go. Like, I really would recommend not going. There's just no reason whatsoever. And even though if you're a Harry Potter fan, you're probably going to be upset after you see it. But because you're...
Maybe. I don't know. Like,
I don't know. Okay. So, yeah. So, roll it back a little bit. So, I saw the two-part in 2018. And so, when it came, was announced to come to Toronto...
We really rewind. Just hit the rewind button.
No, you can keep this all in.
I will keep it.
Rolling it back. I saw the two-part version in May of 2018. So when it was coming to Toronto, I was interested to see it again because it had been, like, years. Since I'd seen it. And I was like, I wonder if I'll feel the same way seeing it. But the thing is, I hate spending hundreds of dollars on theater tickets. I love the theater. Yeah. I want to support the theater. But The prices for this were crazy.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not about to do that. So I started entering the lottery.
Just for reference, before we get to the lottery. Yeah, we literally all started entering the lottery. Shara actually won the lottery and then, like, couldn't go that day. And then I feel like you can't win for, like, a month or something like that. 6 weeks?
I don't know. I feel like she forgot to enter again.
Well, she saw it, so it didn't even matter.
Yeah, she's a subscriber, so she's...
Yeah, at the time was a subscriber. But, like, literally all of us entered the lottery. Alexander and Jake were the first people to win the lottery and go to it. And then my parents won the lottery. You won the lottery. It was like everyone I know won the lottery. And
I recommend it to everyone. Don't buy tickets. Win the lottery. Enter the lottery.
Yeah, but also, like, at the time, the lottery tickets were $50 and now they're $19.
They're $19.
We'll get to surge pricing in a minute. But what was I even saying? Lottery. Oh, pricing. When this was first announced that it was coming to Toronto, we were like... Before pricing was even announced, we were under the impression that this would be similar to Hamilton pricing, which was like kind of surged pricing for Mervish.
And it was also like, wasn't part of the subscription when it was originally announced for 2020.
So,
because it was going to be two parts.
Wow, this is all like coming back
to you. It's coming back to you now. It's coming back to you.
There was an email that went out to subscribers that said, or maybe to the general public, that was like, the only way to buy tickets is if you bought a Mervish gift card. Do you remember this?
You would get first access to tickets if you bought
a gift card.
A Harry Potter specific Mervish gift card. Yes,
I
do remember this.
Which came out, I want to say, like October 2019.
It was for like the holiday season.
Yes. I remember going to the season preview in 2019 for the upcoming season. And Cursed Child was like the big finale of like, it's coming.
It was supposed to open like October 2020, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Fall. And then obviously everything happened. But yeah, it was a very like prestigious way to buy tickets. You needed the gift card. You needed the first access. And then when you got the gift card, you were put into like a virtual queue, which was something that Mervish only started when Hamilton came to Toronto.
Oh,
and then when you got into the virtual queue.
I cannot with virtual queues right now.
No. And then when you got into the virtual queue, after waiting for like 1,000 people to pass you, you get like opened up to a date. And then that date sold out. So now you're trying for another date. And now you're seeing that like the tickets in the orchestra are upwards of $300 a seat. And you're like, am I actually going to Cursed Child? All to find out that like 3 years later, the show is running. It's been running for what? How many months now?
It opened May 31st. So June, July,
a while.
August, September, 4.5 months.
And it's been extended to March. As I said to Steph, every time we record an episode, a show closes. So you never know what's going to happen here. But
Toronto's
like
a little different. They usually give a bit more.
Yeah. So right now it's like warning. March 2023. But at this very moment, like lottery tickets are now down to $19 and rush tickets are $59. So like I think they're struggling a little bit to get butts in seats, which I think is because something that we talked about like when this was coming years ago, if you're going to see it, you're going to see it in that 4 month window. And then like, that's it. You've already seen it.
Yeah, it's not one of those ones that one inspires repeat viewing, I don't think. Though a girl I met at the drama bookshop when I was in New York would say differently. I feel like
the people that you met at the drama bookshop had like hot takes on many things.
They were wonderful. And I had the time of my life at the drama bookshop. But I did ask this girl, I was like, why do you keep going? Like, why do you keep going?
Was she going that day?
She was going that afternoon. And she had like 3 more times she was going to see it that summer. And she'd seen it like 5 times already.
Okay, so what was the reason?
She said there were parts that she really liked, parts that she didn't like too, though. There were parts that she really liked, and she liked some of the actors. I get it, but also, like, it's just...
I don't.
I know. Yeah. So, which comes to our, like, true hot take. The second time I saw it with my mom, and we won the lottery. We went on Canada Day.
You also saw it with your mom the first time.
Yeah, I saw it with my mom the first time as well, but our seats were not great, so she feels like she didn't see it the first time.
Right.
So, the second time... We won the lottery. We were seated separate from each other, which is another complaint I have here. But like,
my dad had the same complaint because my parents were also separated.
I can't even get into
it. In the lottery.
Well, like 2 weeks before, my friend Alessandra and her boyfriend had gone, and they were seated together in the front row.
So
then
we were under
like,
the impression. I swear, did we not say in an episode that like Cursed Child lottery seats are front row, only to find out that they're actually not?
Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're not. At intermission.
Sorry, before you continue to find out about that, is that the lottery tickets you have to pick up at the box office physical tickets. So you aren't actually told this information until like 30 minutes before.
Yes, yes. So we didn't know until we went and picked them up. Yes, so at intermission, I was like, oh, I think this is bad. Like, I'm really, like, finding this unpleasant to watch this time. And there are many reasons for that, and I do actually think it was made worse when it was cut down to one part. Like, there were obviously many flaws with it when it was two parts, but at least I felt that they were going for something.
Yeah.
They were attempting something grand to varying degrees of success. With it as one part, it feels very much like a cash grab. It feels much more commercial now as one part. And I have many critiques, but, like, that's kind of my overall feeling. I just didn't feel, I was like, oh, I don't think this has, like, a good reason to exist besides making money. Which you could say is, you know, theater is a business. Most people want to make money from this. But, yeah, it felt very much like theme park attraction, trying, like, cash grab, trying to monopolize or capitalize on this property to make money. I wasn't getting this, like, overwhelming sense of, oh, we need to be telling this story.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel?
Okay, so I saw this with my brother Corey, who, as I said, like, obsessed with the books from a very young age, but always hated this storyline and thought that the script was, like, not great. And we haven't even got into the, like, glorified fan fiction of all of the plot here, right, but that's what this is to me, at least.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's not written by J.K. Rowling. It's based on an original news story by J.K. Rowling, but it's written by John Tiffany. It's a new play by Jack Thorne, it says. It's not written by her. Mm-hmm. So can you even say it's, like, a proper part of the series? I mean, I guess that's up for interpretation.
Yeah. But, so already walking in, I was, like, more open to it than he was. He was definitely walking in with, like, I don't like this story. I don't think that this show is going to change my mind. I think, and I've said this before, I think if no one has ever seen a show on stage before, this is spectacle theater at its finest. They some are doing some really cool things. However,
fantastic.
If you have seen as many shows as we have, some of those tricks I've seen before, and it's not a big deal. So, like, again, if you've never seen anything, definitely spectacle theater, whatever. Do I think the storyline is good? No, I think the storyline is actually terrible. And to focus your storyline on, like, Cedric Diggory, but then also have, like, zero payoff at the end makes absolutely no sense to me, is wild. And I do think that, like, Act 2 was better than Act 1, but only slightly. And I remember vividly, and I'll never forget this, but, like, Voldemort in Act 2 is so terrible to me. We were laughing, and it's, like, not a laughing moment. And, like,
you guys were in the orchestra, so from the balcony.
We were close. Yeah.
You guys were close. From the balcony, it wasn't as, like, laugh-worthy, let's say.
It was literally, like, the worst mask I've seen, which is crazy because, like, some of the tricks were so incredible.
So good.
Although, like, to me, the best tricks were the ones that were so simple, and I'm going to bring in, like, the craziest thing that I'll say, but, like, the projection time turner, like, reverb was truly the greatest trick in the entire show, and it was a projection. So, like,
it kept happening, and you felt it. When they were in, like, her, like, room at the end, and the projections came across all the ceiling in the entire theater, that was amazing. That was, like, 4K projections. Like,
this is the thing. HD. So, me, like, the biggest complainer of projections of all time, and I stand by everything I say, but, like, when you do them right, and this was done right, it can be so effective.
It's a different kind of projection. The projection that we normally don't like is, like, a white screen where you project a background onto it, or you project, like, a clip art onto it.
I don't understand how the reverb works. I literally don't get it.
They had a practical set, and they used lighting and projections to create an effect that made it,
and, like, enhance, like,
the we were, like, vibrating, like, the room was vibrating.
It was amazing.
In combination with the sound, and it was it's fantastic.
Amazing. Like, the stagecraft, literally so the like highest caliber of projectors on the market. Yeah, I don't know everywhere. What they're using. But like, yeah, that scene specifically in the second act.
Yeah, near the end.
In the second act when the projections are on the ceiling. I'm like, okay, so like, this is what money buys you, obviously. Like, this is where the budget is going into stuff like this. And then obviously there's like fire on stage and there's all of these things happening. But like, a trapdoor doesn't impress me. A reverb projection, I'm like losing my mind for days.
Something you truly haven't seen before. Totally. Was something like that. Like, I never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we will again. Like, I don't know another show that will kind of have this kind of budget to work with.
I do want to talk about the second stage trick that, like, I loved and we also realized that we loved in Company, and it's technically the exact same stage trick.
We feel.
And it's when Harry and Ginny are, like, doing a scene transition and they're in bed.
Well, their bed appears with no one on it, right?
Yes. And it's moving, like, towards the edge of the stage, and then the lights are up, and they're, like, both there. I'm like, what?
They, like, flip a blanket, and then when it settles, they're just kind of, like, chilling in bed.
And you can see under the bed. So, like, yeah. So that's a little different than Company, but, like, same sort
of... No, he, like, appears and disappears tricks. In the bed. Yeah. One that I really liked, I don't even know if this is a trick, but Ginny is, like, so... I think it's Albus's bedroom door is, like, moving across the back of the stage. And you can see Ginny through it, but from either side of it, you can't see her. Like, she only appears through this door. And I was like, I don't know what kind of trick this is, but I love it.
I think there's a lot of mirror play that we can't see properly. Sure, and it's on purpose for, like, the audience not to be able to see, like, specific angles.
It's magic.
Yeah. And then I think the one that everyone loves is the, like, Polyjuice potion trapdoor trick.
I really like, okay, so the one that's my, I mean, I know it's just a trapdoor, but when they got sucked into the phone booth.
Yeah, that one's great.
That works. That works good. And my favorite costume change is like right at the beginning when they change to muggle clothes and they just like kind of like the cloaks just kind of, they spin and the cloaks just appear and you're like, amazing.
Yes.
Like,
that being said, it's fun. And this is a controversial take on your take of the cloak choreography, but like it needed to be toned down. It was too freaking much.
I like the cloak choreography. I feel like more cloak choreography.
No, there was so much. Every single second there was a freaking cape flying across the stage.
It's Stephen Hoggett doing this, like, the wand dance.
Okay, wand dance is great.
Okay, this is actually how I feel. I feel many things about this. I think, and maybe this is, like, coming from a musical lover perspective, I think this show is missing an opening number. I feel like it just starts and, like, starts going. You're like, what's going on? Where am I? Everyone's speaking so fast, especially now with this one-part version. The direction, I feel like to cut it down, they're just, like, actually just, like, don't breathe. Just, like, say your lines,
like,
as fast as possible.
Sometimes the way that we speak on this podcast, like, that's how fast they're talking.
Who are we? But you know what? We're not being paid for this. We do this for free. If you're being paid,
if you're being paid, slow it down.
I really feel like the direction, they cut some things, obviously, but I think the number one thing they did to make this short enough was just, like, just say your lines as fast as possible, and as soon as the person before you finishes their line, start speaking. Like, do not have time to breathe. Do not react. Do not pause. Go. It's crazy.
Not even just, like, as fast as possible, but also, like, scream your lines to the back of the theater.
Screaming. I'm hesitant to criticize the actors in the show because
I think it was a direction choice.
A directing choice.
Like,
I thought that's how they were told to perform it.
Yes.
Even though I do think the acting in this show is bad, I can't criticize the actors for it because it's so consistent throughout the whole thing that it has to be, like, a production choice.
I think it's a combination of a few things. I think it's a production choice. I also think it's a, like, material choice. Like, the material is very difficult to work with.
The dialogue is not, it's not great.
You're trying to make the most out of nothing. Sometimes.
Nothing.
Like, the character of Delphi... Don't even get me started. Sarah Farb, we love you.
Yeah. But you're actually, like, serving in this show. You're actually acting. I will, like, not critique your performance. You're doing good. But it's such a bizarre character.
The character
She also disappears for a huge chunk of the show. And then she comes back. I'm like, I forgot about you. And you're like,
that was my main
the
question.
Plot hinges on you.
Do you remember that, like, as soon as I saw it, we immediately FaceTimed because you're like, need to know your thoughts immediately. And my biggest question to you was, like, was she in the two parts more than she was in this? And you were like, I don't fully remember, but like maybe a little bit more.
I do remember her being in more of it. And yet when I read this last night, I had the same feeling that I had when I saw it in July. I was like, oh, hello. Forgot about you. You haven't been here in a while. I'm like, when was the last time I saw you? She's because like, they kind of like leave her. So they kind of, this is like true spoilers here, but they kind of like leave her before they go and go back to the second task, which is kind of at the end of act one.
But like to back it up a bit, I feel like we've given zero context. So like we are in the Triwizard Tournament.
Okay. Can you do a 30-second plot summary?
Honestly, no. Okay. Because I think the first part of that, I like half the time I don't know what's going on. I know that they've like Harry's son, Albus, and Draco's son, Scorpius, are at Hogwarts together.
They're best including, friends. Including
like, you know, like other people are there. Well, they're like not best friends when they first meet, but they are best friends. Also potentially lovers. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we will get to that towards the end
of this show. But when they first meet, they like meet like Cedric's uncle, who then like Delphi is taking care of. This is literally how I feel about this.
Okay.
Delphi is taking care of Cedric's uncle. And then they're like, we need to make sure that Cedric doesn't die. So then they time turner and complete all the tasks of the Triwizard Tournament. Okay. And spoiler, he's still dead. So
I'm going to attempt to do a concise plot summary. Here we go. This play picks up right where Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows leaves off 19 years later when it's Albus's first year at Hogwarts. He insanely gets sorted into Slytherin, which no one in his family has ever been sorted into before. So he feels really separate from his father. He's also very resentful of his father because his father's very famous. And he feels like he'll never live up to the expectations of his father. So 1 year before he's not very popular at school. His best friend is Scorpius Malfoy's son. There's a rumor that Scorpius is actually Voldemort's son and not Draco Malfoy's son. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Forgot about
that. This is kind of important. Before his fourth year, Albus hears Cedric Diggory's dad come and visit Harry and say, the ministry has a time turner, which is a device that Hermione used to have that allows you to go back in time. He says, the ministry has a time turner. I want you to go back in time and save my son, Cedric. Harry says, the ministry doesn't have a time turner, which is a lie.
And why did I think it was his uncle?
It's his father. It's his father. He's allegedly Delphi's uncle.
That's why,
so,
uncle.
Right. Harry's like, I can't do that. I'm so sorry. I can't go back and change time. Albus hears this and is like, my dad, he's the worst. He lets people die for him. I need to go fix what my dad broke. So they go find Delphi. They go find the time turner. They take Polyjuice Potion. They find the time turner. They keep going back in time to the different events of the Triwizard Tournament to attempt to save Cedric from dying. Bad things happen from there. Is that the setup? Is that the moment?
Yes, that was great. My main question, why do we care about this?
This is the question. Why is this place?
Sorry, Cedric Diggory, but like, do we care?
Edward Cullen is...
I will say that here. One scene when they're like back in the maze, spoiler for that book, but like when he dies in the maze, but when you see like the guy that's playing Cedric, like running through the maze, I was like, wow, I love this. This is great.
He,
but, like,
he also plays the guy who dies later. It's the same guy. I feel like he dies twice. He plays Cedric and he plays Craig or whatever who dies later.
Craig. I forgot. Remember Craig?
Yeah.
No, I just really feel like the Craig. Entire time I was watching this, I was like, why are we doing this? Like, why okay. is
so
this
I have a theory about that as well.
Here?
I have a theory about that as well.
What's the theory?
They knew they needed to have a story that entailed time turning because they wanted to be able to revisit iconic moments from the original series and also get back iconic characters from the original series. The biggest entrance applause the first time I saw the two-part version was when Snape turned around from that blackboard. That audience lost their minds. They were so excited to see him.
I was, again, laughing at the caricature performance that this actor was giving of Snape. It was so theme park to me, I couldn't handle it.
No, also, like, this time, it wasn't good. But
and this
that
is also
first
like,
time, it was thrilling.
Right.
It was thrilling
and then, like,
that first time.
I would say the same thing for Dumbledore. I feel like Shara had said to us that, like, she hated the Dumbledore moments because it felt like Everything felt theme park to me. Like, that's, it's so bad to say, but, like, that's what it felt
this
like.
This show is an attraction. It is a theme park attraction. I will say, when I was reading this yesterday, there's a scene between Harry and Dumbledore's portrait near the end that brought me to tears yesterday. It actually...
I feel like that's a very low standard.
Okay, that's pretty rude. I was listening to the music. The song that is playing at that moment is, let me find it. I think it's called, like, Paint and Memory. I was a wreck reading this scene. It was so touching. Just, I was crying. But yes, everyone in the show is, like, really stripped down to, like, one characteristic. Like, no one is allowed to have nuance in this show. It's just, like, one thing about each of them. And unfortunately,
for all of the characters, to me, their one characteristic, annoying.
Annoying.
Everyone was annoying. I actually do want to shout out, because I did like the kid that played Scorpius, and he's like really the only person that I liked. You didn't have the same person because you had a mid-show call out.
Yeah, we actually had a dramatic moment. near the end of Act 1, or during, it. Well, yeah, near the end of Act 1. I don't even know. No, about halfway through Act 1, because it's near the end, it's the end of Act 1 in Part 1 in the original series, is that bookcase scene. There's a scene where they're in Hermione's office in the ministry, they're climbing in and out of a bookcase to try and get the time turner. It's a Polyjuice situation. So Scorpius, Albus, and Delphi are disguised as Harry, Draco, and Hermione. No, they're Harry, Ron, and Hermione, not Draco. You're right. Harry, Ron, and Hermione. They're disguised as Harry, Ron, and Hermione. So basically what happens is they're on the staircase, and the only actor we can see right now is Harry, and which means that Scorpius is about to re-enter because he's about to get sucked into the bookcase and thrown back out of Scorpius, and the curtain starts dropping, and the audience starts applauding because the curtain is dropping, obviously. And me having seen the show before and also, like, understanding theater, knowing that the show obviously wouldn't end in the middle of a scene, I was like, what's going on? And then over the loudspeaker, like, we're going to take a brief pause for whatever. So the lights come back up and everyone's like, okay. And then they're like, we will resume the show in just a few minutes. Due to a health issue, the role of Scorpius Malfoy will now be played by this person. I don't remember. And I was like, okay. And then they just kind of... Harry Potter was, like, at the top of the stairs. He's like, where was I? And then he just, like, crawls back in, gets sucked back. It was so funny. It gets sucked in, and Scorpius gets thrown out. It's a different person. And we're just like, okay, here we are. We're going with it.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
It was wild. But, it was wild.
The guy that I saw, his name is Thomas Mitchell Barnett, and I honestly thought that he was the best part of the show. Over the top, don't get me wrong, but I think that character is, like, here's the thing.
Intentionally.
Everyone talks quick, everyone yells, but, like, Scorpius to me seems like a kid that has, like, a lot of anxiety, and it fit the characterization, whereas, like, everyone else, like, truly, Albus may be the most annoying character to ever be written.
He is a little bit
another, like, whiny brat. Like,
he is a bit of a whiny brat. He is a little bit, like, feeling sorry for himself, and obviously, like, Harry does not handle the situation with him very well at all.
And Ginny, and like, he tries, says, but, like, whatever.
And he says some mean things, but, like, I'm much more willing to give, like, Harry the benefit of the doubt than Albus. Like, I just don't understand how hard, like, why his life is so hard.
Because you love Harry.
Maybe because I have the backstory of 7 books, 8 movies, you know, lifetime of him. And Albus is just not given the time to be developed as a character. Because we're rushing through exposition, rushing through plot, rushing through magic tricks that are fun, but are, at the end of the day, doing nothing to push the story forward.
Yeah, it's true. Like, this is the main issue with this, is that, like, and I don't know that the two parts fix it, because realistically, like, you're still asking us to, like, be invested in these two characters.
But at least the acting is not painful. At least the acting was not as painful, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's so rushed that everyone just feels so underdeveloped, and, like, that's really not a great thing for your play. No. It's just not.
I feel like the two-part version just had, like, a little bit of room to breathe. Like, when you're watching a scene in a movie or a TV show, or when you're having a conversation with someone that you know in real life, you know, you don't always know what to say immediately. There are pauses. There are moments. There is a time to react. Whereas there's, like, literally no time to even take a breath in this.
There's no time
version.
To do anything, because when they're not speaking, they're, like, moving a set piece that's happening so quickly that you're just like, can we stop for a second? The only time that you get, any time that any of us get to stop is that intermission. And then you're like, whoa, was that just an hour and a half? Like, that's crazy. Now, does the quick pace of their speaking help the pace of the show? Maybe, because I actually thought the pace was, like, decent.
It didn't feel that long. If that, no. You know, it didn't feel like, oh my god, I've been here for 3.5
because
hours.
Because everyone's
like,
talking fine. A mile a minute.
Yeah, you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about, like, some things that were truly baffling to us. Because I want to talk about the Trolley Witch.
I didn't hate the Trolley Witch as much as you did.
I swear, I blinked. And then I was like, wait, how did we get here? How is Wolverine on the top of the trolley? Like, what is going on? I was just baffled.
To me, I feel like one of the issues, there are many issues with this show, but like it's the combination of like that kind of trick character whatever, and then like super serious trick character whatever, that like you either gotta go full on one or full on the other, and bringing her in didn't make sense to the rest of the tricks that they were doing, but no. I could see them going more heavily on that like animated front and it working too, but because it wasn't like the same as the rest of the story, it felt out of place and weird.
Yes, like,
but I also like at the same time kind of wanted more of that like weirdness.
I don't think so, because what I always liked about these books is that even though they were fantastical, like, the world always felt very grounded. Mm. And then I was like, this is not, like, magic we've seen before in this world. This person who, like, transforms into kind of, like, a demon when someone tries to escape the train. And then didn't even succeed in keeping them on the train.
What else was truly baffling to you?
What else was truly baffling to me? I mean, many things. Why in like one alternate universe, Ron was married to Padma and they had a child named Panju? is that racist or am I reading into this? Like, I don't know. Why was his name Panju?
No, it's a little racist. It's a little racist.
Like, why?
I thought you were going to go for like another practical set thing, not like a plot hole.
These are the things that stuck out to me. Like, when I was reading this,
truly
I'm
baffling
like,
that you based your entire storyline on Cedric Diggory. Truly baffling.
Yeah, it does feel like they were grasping at straws to figure out what this should be. It doesn't feel like a story that needed to be told in this world.
No.
It felt like something they're like, well, we need something. Okay, well, what if it's this and it's this? They're like, okay, we need to get back to the fourth book because it's great, like, set pieces. Because, you know, there were great set pieces. They're like in the forest with the dragons. You don't really see the dragons. But when they're underwater and the way that they stage the whole underwater scene, that's
actually
really cool.
When they're in the forest, one of my favorite tricks, which is not a trick, it's literally just fire, was the Patronus. I was like, this is beautiful. Mm, I love this, like, blue fire that, like, looked like an animal.
Some stuff was really successful at, like, evoking the, like, images of these spells and this magic.
Malfoy's ponytail. Not successful.
Oh, God. Yeah, why does he have to have a ponytail?
It's like a Gaston kind of ponytail.
I'm watching House of the Dragon. And these Targaryens, right, they all have this long blonde hair. And so it's giving very Draco Malfoy. Like Matt Smith in this show, I'm like, are you Legolas? Are you Lucius Malfoy? I don't know. It's really giving. I'm going to tell my father about this.
And also that scene when he's like fighting with Harry and like chairs are moving.
Oh my god, the duel!
When
it's like,
why are we doing
like
this?
Five people dressed in black, like lifting the chairs and like lifting Harry and Draco. It's so bad.
It's funny. Like I was talking to someone the other day about like this show because she had recently seen it, and she was like, "I know they cut it down from two parts, but like could have lost an hour." And I was like, "You know what? You're not wrong."
Deus Ex Machina of Draco having another time turner, like, oh, we're just gonna
have
to fix
this. Oh, I know.
Just like, it's so uncreative to just be like, oh, there's another time turner, we're gonna go find him. There are things I like about it, and I will talk about things that I liked, but like overall, like it just didn't like give the same feeling that reading those books or even watching those movies gives.
Yeah. What are things that you like at an hour into this?
What are things that I liked? Okay, so here's the thing. The first time I saw it, and it actually did hit me again. The second time I saw it, and when I was reading it again, it hit me as well. The kind of right near the end when this is like a true spoiler. Okay, this is a true spoiler for the show, but we're gonna get into it. At the end where Harry and everyone else watches Voldemort kill Harry's parents again, and you hear that scene happen and you see the green light flashing. That was very emotional to me, and I cried every time. I think that comes from not from any work that the play put in, but from the like decades of emotional investment that I already have in these characters. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not they didn't do anything, but I felt it.
Like as emotionally invested, I was like, that scene did not feel earned at all. We did nothing to get to this point that it feels earned.
It really did it for me. It really did it for me. Every time.
Oh, I know.
Other things I love the score. I love the score.
Right. I think it's important to talk about that. And when we talk about like franchise and fonts and like everything like that, because the marketing of this is like kind of confusing because you're using like licensed John Williams, like Harry Potter music, yet you will not find that anywhere in this show. It is completely different.
No. So the score is done by Imogen Heap, who I've been a fan of for a very long time. When they announced she's going to be doing the score for this, I was like, oh, that's quite interesting. But then when I heard it, I loved it. Some of it is her like previous music, just kind of repurposed for this show. You'll hear her famous song, Hide and Seek, in the show. But I think it's really, really beautiful. And it's different from what you would expect to come from this story. And I think that's intentionally kind of separating it from what you expect from the movie. It is a different energy. The kind of electronica, poppy moment, the choral voices. I think it's all her voice layered over and over and over itself. I was watching yesterday. She did a Tiny Desk concert a few years ago that I've seen before, but I watched it again yesterday. Because she demonstrates these gloves that she has that she uses to create. Have you seen these gloves? That she uses to create music. So it's plugged into a computer and she moves her hands to create the track, the score, and the echo, and the layering, and the looping. And it's beautiful. And that version of Hide and Seek she does in that Tiny Desk is the version of Hide and Seek from Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. It's not the version from the album. It's that. I really think the score is beautiful. And even as I was listening to it, I was working today and I put it on while I was working and I could hear a song and I was like, oh, that's this scene. Oh, that's from this scene. Oh, that's this moment. So it does really evoke those moments. I think the score is great. I also really like the movement. I really like the movement done by Stephen Hoggett. I think, could it be better placed?
Yeah.
Yes. But I really think it needs an opening number. I don't know if you would call it that in a play, but I think it needs something to kind of immerse you in that world a bit more with music instead of them just kind of rolling out on stage and talking. But I really love the movement and the kind of like pedestrian kind of like jerky movement that they do. And I love the staircases. I really love the staircases. The staircase ballet when Scorpius and Albus are circling each other because they can't talk. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah.
I think the stuff that is, like, very reminiscent of, like, some of the pictures that we've seen in the movies or, like, something that you might, like, see in your head when you're reading those books, like, the staircases is so iconic to all of those, like, movies that, like, yes, those moments, like, definitely hit for sure. I like the music. I don't think I love the music as much as you do. I don't love track. And I know there's no other way to do this, obviously, because it's such a specific style of music. But I felt, and maybe this is because I saw it, like, very early in the run, that it, like, felt like we were pressing play. And I just, like, don't love that.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting a bit further back, so maybe, you know, the sound was mixed a bit differently where I was.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like it was clicking on a track. Maybe my hearing's not as good. because I feel like it's so... It's very much mood music, you know?
It's true. Like, when you end Act 1 and it becomes, like, spoiler, Voldemort Day, it's, like, a big, like, almost, like, crash in the score to, like, show you that we're at, like, a totally different period of time.
World, yeah.
So, I think, like, sound effects are done pretty well in this. I don't know. It's so hard.
Technically, there's no problems with this show. Like from a technical perspective.
Although, I would be interested to, like, know, like, what's that fight call like? What's that, like...
Oh my god. Pre-show probably their hours before.
Set, like...
We haven't talked about the Dementors.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, like, sometimes I wonder when we see, like, a random show, like, how they do two show days. Like, how does this show do a two show day? And I'm not even talking about the actors.
The reset.
I'm talking, like, the reset of the tracks. Like, it's truly wild.
It's at 12 and 7 o'clock, right? It's at 12 and 7.
Yeah, it's an early show because it's long.
Because it's long. So if it's at 3.5 hours, let's say everyone's out by 4, they kind of have, like, 2 hours to reset.
And that's, like, also including, like, sweeping the ground of the theater to get all of everyone's like stuff out of there. Like, it's a very, very fast turnaround. We always think of like confetti in shows in between like two show days. No, this is literally like resetting an entire like magic show, basically. From the start. Dementors, I think, is something that works very well. However, I think it was a big build up for like not a lot of payoff in Toronto specifically. I wanted more.
I don't know if I remember incorrectly, but I
don't think you do, because I feel like I've seen a production photo where there's more than one.
I swear there was more than one Dementor flying around the audience. I was sitting quite high up, and I didn't think we were going to get one coming as high as we did, and we did have one come right up to the top, but I swear there were, like, two on the stage, and then multiple, I don't know how many, because, again, I was quite high up, more than one in the audience flying over. Like, one coming straight up to the top, and then maybe another one flying around. Like, there was more. And also, the Edmarvish is huge, and the theater in London was much more compact. Like, it was higher and, like, shorter, whereas Edmarvish goes really far back. So the Edmarvish has a lot of space to fill with these Dementors, whereas, like, a lot less would go a longer way in the theater in London. But yeah, just two on stage, or maybe three on stage. I don't remember. I think it was two. Two on either side of the Dark Mark.
In Toronto,
and then
or...
the one, yeah, in Toronto.
Two and on stage, because it was for... No, I don't even think there were two on stage until we got into the second part.
No, because before, yeah, like at the end of Act 1, I think there were two. I do think there were two. And then one flying around the audience.
It I felt, swear there was only the one flying around the audience, and then when we come back after intermission, there's the two for like Ron and Hermione.
Right, that's the thing. I like the Dementors a lot. I think they really, like, are very freaky and creepy. But, so Ron and Hermione received the Dementors' kiss at one point. Don't worry, it's time travel. They're fine. But
also, like, even if they weren't, it's fine.
It's fine. It takes them so long to hook them into the harnesses.
Strap you up. Long. And make sure that you can,
like, they've got to be wearing the harness the whole time. It should just be like clip, clip, okay, we're good. It takes them, the Dementors come down, I swear, 2 minutes later they're rising back up. It takes forever to get them clipped in. You lose the momentum of the scene.
Yeah, and that's like another thing of, like, you know, we've seen a lot of theater, we've seen a lot of harness, we've seen a lot of like really quick things happening, that this felt like painfully slow.
You know, we've seen Glinda in her bubble, like, kind of step onto it. Like, an ensemble member come by, like, hook her in, and then the bubble's going. This took forever. And you're just like, okay, they're getting kissed. Like, let's go. Let's make this happen.
Yeah. I saw a chandelier fall, like, 2 weeks ago, and it fell way faster than the Dementors.
It's fast. It's fast. it's just, like, it's... A lot of this is, like, almost right, but, like, not quite. And then a lot of this is, like, really wrong. I feel like if they... I don't know. I feel like they could fix a few things and leave some things bad. And it would have, like, a lot of returns. If that makes sense.
Well, I do want to talk about... I feel like we're, like, kind of, like, wrapping up here, maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure. The change... Like, one of the changes that's maybe for... the better, or what happened because of J.K. Rowling, and that's kind of like the relationship between Scorpius and Albus. And you said that, like, the ending is kind of different when
it's
you
changed.
Saw it the first time.
It's absolutely changed. So when I first saw the play and when the script came out and when I read it, there's a lot of mentions of Albus having a crush on Delphi and Scorpius having a crush on Rose. They both have these female love interests.
Who's also Ron and Hermione's daughter.
Daughter, yes. But there's also, you know, it's a very close and intense, even in this, it is a very close and intense relationship between Albus and Scorpius. And a lot of people read this and saw the play and read into it a love story between them, which I do see it reading this, even though they're talking about crushes on girls, their relationship can be seen as romantic love. It's also important to remember, but these characters by the end of the play are 14 years old. So it's a discovery period. It's a discovery period for them. But a lot of people read that into it, and there was, fan fiction written about this fan fiction, or people saying, this is a love story, this is a romance. And so when it was restaged with this one part person, they took out all of the references to Albus's crush on Delphi, Scorpius's crush on Rose. At the end, at the end of the original, it says, I asked Rose out on a date. But at the end of this new version, it's I asked Rose Weasley to be my friend.
Well, and so, the thing an that explicit stuck out change to me was that, Albus very clearly says to Harry that Scorpius is the most important person in his life and will always be the most important person in his life.
And yes, that is new. That is added. Yeah. That is added. That's absolutely added. He does tell his dad, Scorpius is my best friend, he's very important to me, but no, him saying explicitly Scorpius is the most important in my life and will always be the most important in my life is a new addition. And some people are why didn't they go well? And so I feel it leaves it very much up to the audience's interpretation. You can read that into that or you cannot. It's absolutely up to you. But it does absolutely leave room for that potential. And I think some people were why don't they go all the way? Why don't they kiss? Why don't they do this? And I actually don't think it's any, I actually think it's just, these are 14-year-old boys. It's just, letting them be...
Yeah, they're just, trying to figure things out.
Children, letting them, be exploring their feelings, their emotions. And it also, I like when you let the audience kind of project or draw conclusions or imagine a future for these characters. I kind of like that it's a little bit open and that you are able to draw your own conclusions about what the relationship is.
Mm-hmm. And also, there's no sequel or anything, so we don't know what actually
happens. It's up to you. It's up to you. If you want to believe Albus and Scorpius get married and are in love forever, that's amazing. If you want to believe they're wonderful
just
friends,
besties.
Amazing. If you want to believe they're roommates, that's cool too. I don't know. But it's that it's left up for interpretation and that they removed anything that kind of fought against that impression, I think is good. And also we needed to cut the time for Albus talking about his crush on Delphi and her kissing him on the cheek.
She does kiss him on the cheek still, but it means nothing. I think it's in my mind, the way that it staged and she did it was to kind of build trust with them. Mm.
There is a reference also in after she's kind of destroyed or whatever, spoiler alert, Scorpius is to him, you do older women, you know?
Yeah.
Which I don't think is in there anymore.
No. Final thoughts on Cursed Child.
Wow. Can I have another final thought? Oh, actually, this is actually my number one gripe. This is the last thing.
Okay.
I have brought out my Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban copy because I feel it's very important. A lot of this hinges on time travel, this play.
Yes.
And the use of the time turner. And when I first saw it, I'm like, this is not how the time turner works. This is incorrect. I'm going to read a line from here. So basically in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, when they go back in time, they change something. And then when they come back, things have changed. But that is not how, to me, time travel works when it's explained in here. It says Harry, he believes they go back in time. He believes in the first timeline he saw his father. But when they go back in time, he realizes he didn't. He saw himself. And he said, I knew I could do it this time because I'd already done it. Does that make sense? And it does to me because the way, what that implies to me is that there's one timeline. And when you go back, you're just, it's already happened. I don't know if that's, there's one linear time and you're not creating a multiple alternate realities. Whereas this play purports that there are multiple alternate realities. And I think that's summarizes my number one problem with this is that whoever wrote this didn't take the time to understand how the magic of the world works. Mm-hmm. And they didn't focus and work on and make sure that it fit into the world that was already established. They just repurposed things for their own use. And I think that's probably why it wasn't as successful. And it always really annoyed me. You know, maybe someone will tell me I'm wrong. That's not how it is. But
I don't know. Because I'm thinking about I can't remember what movie it is. It's when, like, Hagrid's something animal gets, like,
yeah, it's in this one.
Is it that one?
Yeah, it's in this one. Yeah.
So that corresponding movie, I remember, like, every time that they go back in time, they know exactly what they're doing because they've already relived that. So already I agree. Happened.
Like, I feel Buckbeak like timeline... never died in that timeline because yes, even Buckbeak. In the first yeah. timeline, they believe he did, but he never did because Harry and Hermione had already saved him.
Isn't there it a moment when they, timeline. Like, see themselves?
Yes, exactly. They see themselves. Yeah. Well, they see themselves. And then that is that moment. Harry thought in the first timeline, because he didn't know he was going to travel back, he thought he saw his father conjuring the Patronus, but it turns out it was him because he'd already done it.
Right. Yes.
There's only one timeline.
In Act 2 of this is when the timelines become, like, extremely messy and make zero sense.
Yes. It's literally just, like, everywhere. Completely different worlds. People are alive who should be dead. People are dead
really
who should be alive.
Not really time traveling. They're, like, time jumping and, like, incorrectly.
Yeah, they
so
go.
So I agree. Well, yeah, I didn't think about that.
To me, it was the one thing that jumped out to me. I was like, this is not the proper mechanism of the world. And it just, like, indicated these people were not, like, being respectful to the original world that was created. They were, I don't know. It was just doing it to do it. It wasn't about being correct to this world. So anyway.
Well, I think that leads back to, like, the intro of this conversation of, like, is this just a cash grab? Maybe it is.
It definitely feels that way, especially as a one-parter, I feel, because if the acting is not good, if the storyline is not good, like, what are we there for? It's obviously, like, there is amazing stagecraft in it, but, you know, another thing I felt, a lot of the stagecraft wasn't moving the story forward. When I saw Company this summer, we were talking about the bed trick. I was like, this one bed trick moved the story forward more than all of the tricks in Harry Potter combined. It, like, added more to the storytelling than anything that we saw on stage in Cursed Child.
So much of this show to me was tricks for tricks' sake, and that's it. Yeah. It's like, you expect magic, you're here for Harry Potter, okay, here's magic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, I guess, like, final thoughts. I'll start. My final
thoughts
are, you gonna
rate it out of 5?
Though, I will rate it, but my final thoughts are that, like, was this a waste of, like, potentially a $20 million renovation at the Ed Mirvish Theater?
Oh my god, we didn't even talk about that.
Maybe. I will say, briefly to touch on that, I think the theater looks stunning. I think the blue works for whatever moves into that theater eventually. Obviously, they will need to take down all of the houses, because we can't have the houses for future shows in the theater. I know, we need to do that. but I think the blue works. I'm not sure about the aisle situation, because they've completely changed the aisle. It's now...
a center aisle instead of...
A center aisle.
Two on the side.
Which is, like... kind of interesting.
And
but no one's actually in the center, which is what you said.
And when I was at the balcony, I sat in the balcony and I was up there and I was looking around. I was like,
the back.
This used to go so much further back. I was like, I told my mom, I was like, this used to go so much further back. Because I remember me and Shara went and saw School of Rock and we sat in the stools way at the back and we asked an usher. Mom's like, how long have you been working here? And he's like, oh, 20 years. And we're like, amazing. You're exactly who we need for this. We're like, did this used to go further back? He's like, yes. Yes, there's, like, a bunch of seats behind, like, a false wall back there. So they've cut the capacity of the Ed Mirvish Theater.
Yeah, for this. The other thing that I've heard is that it will need at least 3 years to recoup in Toronto. And I also don't see that being something that's going to happen here.
I just don't think we have a big enough audience here to...
No.
To last that long.
Yeah. All that to say, I think, again, if you are a fan of Harry Potter, and now that the tickets are, like, decently cheap, go see it.
Lottery or rush only. Do not buy in advance.
Yeah, do not spend, like, us saying that, like, you know, sometimes it's great to spend money, but, like, Mirvish is a huge corporation. Like, they got the money that they needed. Actually, they haven't got the money that they needed for this yet, but, like, don't spend the full $250 to sit in the orchestra when you can sit in the exact same seat for $59. Yes, you do have to get it the day of, but, like, if you're available and in Toronto, like, really take advantage of the lottery and the rush system here. So I wouldn't say that I don't recommend it, but I would say, like, walk in with maybe low expectations and have a good time that way. I also think that in terms of, like, what we've said along this episode, there is no rewatchability of this show for me. I will not see this show again. And
that's kind of like a tough thing to say, because if you know us, I am a 3-show, 4-show, like, I see everything multiple times, and this is not something that I will return to. That being said, I will give Cursed Child a 2.5 out of 5. Who should I pick for this? Actually, I'm just going to go simple and pick Time Turners. 2.5 out of 5 Time Turners.
Wow.
For this show. Sorry.
Wow. 2.5 seems high.
I'm not being like generous, but like not like too generous.
I have been thinking about what to rate this, because it's very frustrating to have to rate this. Mm-hmm. But what I decided on yesterday was to give this 2 out of 5. And I actually was like much more kind to it than I think you were, but also I don't know if I was actually. I'm gonna give it 2 out of 5 portraits of Dumbledore. He was trying to give us wisdom. Did he succeed? I don't know. But he was trying to give us wisdom.
Not sure.
I think it ended up being a lot more blatantly commercial than I wanted it to be. And I also think
maybe than it intended to be.
Yeah. Even though those movies are multi-million dollar, billion dollar movies, they never felt to be like a cash grab to me the way that this does. They never felt theme park to me the way that this does.
Like, even paying to go to the theme parks didn't feel like a cash grab to me.
No,
like,
and that was expensive. But that was expensive.
And you're buying a wand, you're buying a pin, you're buying a sweatshirt.
Butterbeer, you're gonna buy.
You're buying everything.
You have to buy the park hopper to take the Hogwarts Express.
Exactly.
You can't even just buy one park per day.
And I'm like, take my money, take my money.
It feels worth it in a way that this, like, absolutely should not.
Before we go to our obsessions, as promised, we're going to sort ourselves right now. This is not the official Pottermore quiz. This is a BuzzFeed article that Steph just found 1 second ago.
Just as accurate. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Read us the quiz and we will answer appropriately.
Okay. To start, pick one word to describe yourself. Brave, determined, patient, clever.
Wow.
Not to toot my own horn, but I'm going to pick clever.
I'm going to go with determined.
Well, this is one of those stupid quizzes that's, like, so obvious which answer belongs to which
question. Yeah, but here that's fine.
Okay, what's your favorite color? Red, green, yellow, blue.
Green.
Wow, mine is yellow.
To be Slytherin.
Okay, choose a character to spend the day with. Dumbledore, Malfoy, Cedric Diggory, Luna Lovegood.
Cedric! Dumbledore. Although, in my heart... Because I, like, wish I was a Slytherin. I would like to spend the day with Malfoy.
With Malfoy? I'm going to pick Luna. She seems like a nice, fun person.
Okay.
What's your favorite animal? A lion? A snake? A badger? Or an eagle?
Okay, well, like, definitely none of these animals.
I'm going to pick a snake.
A snake is your favorite?
Of these four. Choose an element. Fire, water, earth, air. I'm a Virgo, so I'm picking Earth.
Allegedly, I'm an air sign, so I'll go air.
Okay. Pick a random item. Golden snitch, locket, houseplant, or book.
Snitch. No! Wait, sorry, I pressed locket accidentally.
I'm gonna pick book.
Okay.
How do you enjoy spending your free time? Going to the gym? Absolutely not.
Definitely not.
Playing video games? No.
No.
Hanging with your friends, reading a book.
Aww. I'll say
hanging with my friends. What's your worst trait?
Ooh.
Too reckless. Tends to be sneaky. Often a pushover. Overly strict. This is hard.
I'm definitely not reckless. I'm also not a pushover, I don't think.
Maybe, am I sneaky?
Am I overly strict? Would you say I'm overly strict?
I don't know. Like, sometimes I feel like I am, but I don't know. Like, if enough to be in a quiz?
I feel like I'm more strict than I am sneaky, though.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't really think I'm very sneaky either. I agree with that for myself. I don't really think I'm sneaky. Tell us your ideal setting. Woods, dungeon, kitchen, library.
I'm going to say... kitchen.
I knew you would say kitchen. I'm going to say the library. Finally, tell us your dream job. Athlete, politician, these. Psychologist, writer. Okay. They're all horrible.
Well, definitely not a politician.
No.
Definitely not an athlete.
No.
I feel like writer is the most close to my current career.
Yeah. None of these are close to my current career. I'm going to go psychologist. Oh. What did it say, Tara?
Slytherin!
Slytherin!
I don't think I'm a Slytherin, though.
You might be.
You're as ambitious as it gets, making you the ideal Slytherin. As a natural leader, it's no wonder why you were sorted here. You know what?
Everyone
feel like a natural leader.
Slytherins get a bad rap because they're like Death Eaters only, but Slytherins are driven. They are ambitious. They use what they have to get what they want, you know? It's not bad to be a Slytherin. I am a Ravenclaw, as I knew.
Did you get it on there?
Yeah. With a knack for creativity and education, you're the perfect Ravenclaw. Pursuing knowledge is part of who you are, which is why this house calls your name.
Wow.
This is for the house for smart people.
I'm okay with the Slytherin because, like, as I said earlier, I would like to hang out with Draco Malfoy. Like, so, like, maybe Malfoy. It fits.
Wow. Wow. How exciting.
Yeah. Okay, well, that wraps up our episode on Cursed Child. If you've made it to our obsessions, thank you so much for listening. And this is probably going to be, like, an extended obsession because I just went to New York. So it's now time for our obsession of the week.
So I'll be quick with my obsession because Tara's got to talk. But my obsession, I got an email from Musical Stage Company and they sent an email promoting their Uncovered series. They're doing ABBA this year. And it's a video with Vanessa Sears singing a mashup of Money, Money, Money and Angel Eyes. And it also has Reza Jacobs playing, I don't even know what instruments he's playing. He's playing a bowl at one point. He did the arrangements. Oh. He does the arrangements every year. But I do believe that this is his last Uncovered that he's doing.
We've never seen an Uncovered.
I know, we haven't been. So maybe this is the time to go ABBA. You know, anyway, it's a beautiful, really fun arrangement of Money, 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 Angel Eyes on the Musical Stage Company YouTube page.
Money, 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 must be funny in the rich man's world. Money, 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 always sunny in the rich man's world.
Sounds great. She's doing wonderful riffs. I really like the money, money, money section. I think that's my favorite right at the top. So she does sounds really great in it. And it's making me want to see Uncovered this year. So maybe we'll see you there.
Maybe like we'll shout out though to Musical Stage Company's YouTube page because I feel like they only put bangers on there.
They deliver. They really deliver every single time. And they really don't get enough views. Like this only has 953 views right now. So let's make this happen. Let's have this go viral.
Okay.
I'm going to do it.
I don't know that we're the ones that are going to make it go viral.
I'm going to make it go viral. Okay.
Okay. My obsession of the week, I will get to it in a second, but I just quickly want to recap my trip to New York. I saw Almost Famous the first day of my trip. And if you remember on our last episode, I had said that someone said that it was a perfect musical. And I am here to tell you that is definitely not a perfect musical. And it definitely needs some work. And Steph and I were talking about this a lot before we started recording. And we both agree, even though you haven't seen it, but Cameron Crowe should step away from the project and let someone else maybe jump in. Because it just feels like they've taken that movie script and they've put it on stage. And I don't think it's working, sadly.
It's unfortunate. I think sometimes you do need some distance to adapt something to make it.
Yeah.
It's a different medium and you need some perspective.
But it ended up being very easy to get tickets. It's been on the boards on TKTS since it started previews. And I just like walked up to the box office day of show and got a ticket. So that was easy to do that. The next day, we knew that we wanted to see Into the Woods. And we weren't like thinking of seeing a matinee, but then we were like walking around. I did walk into the Music Man and I did ask if they had standing room tickets, and they did have 14 tickets, and I left it up to my brothers to make the decision, and we chose not to see the Music Man because $76 is still, like, kind of expensive to stand at the back of the Winter Garden Theater.
To stand!
Yeah. We did walk over to Funny Girl because I was interested to see. I know that they were doing standing room as well. Those tickets are $42. There was a line, so I already knew that if there was going to be tickets, it's something that, like, they wouldn't have been available until probably, I don't know, like, 10 minutes before a curtain, and it wasn't something that I was willing to do when there was already like a group of people waiting there. I don't know how many they give out, but I assumed it wasn't that many. Right. And while we were there, I was like, should I just go see if there's any tickets for MJ? Because like, we're literally here. Walked into the theater to see if there's any matinee tickets. This show is sold out. Wow. And if you've been following the weekly grosses, MJ has been sold out, I want to say like every single week post Tony's. At current time of episode record, which is October 18th when we're recording, they have just broken the house record for the 7th time in a row. So that show is going nowhere. But because that happened, we were like, okay, well, we're in Times Square. It's like approaching 2 o'clock. Should we just go to Phantom and see if there's any standing room tickets? And you better believe that there were 6 tickets left for Phantom. We only needed 3. $29 to stand at the back of the orchestra. Great price. I highly recommend. I don't recommend if you've never seen Phantom because there are moments where it's a little bit like obstructed, which we were fine with because my brothers and I have all seen Phantom before. We went because, one, it's closing on Broadway and I don't know that I'll ever see it again. So it was like a final goodbye to the Phantom. And two, because my brother Corey has not seen it on Broadway and we wanted to make sure that he saw the original staging before it's no longer. Because I am in the camp that Phantom will return to Broadway, but I do think it will be the remounted, restaged production.
I agree. So they're going to cut the orchestra. You know, they're going to cut the expensive
the candles to cut the like
cut the cast.
Nothing will ever beat, and I've seen a lot of shows and I can like wholeheartedly say this, that Phantom of the Opera staging is one of the best things I've ever seen on stage. It's the candles exciting. Coming up from the ground, the boat ride in, all of the smoke, everything. And like this cast that's on right now, like run, they're so good. It's like, it's such a well-oiled machine at this point. It's obviously been running for like 30 plus years, but if you can get to Phantom before it closes in February with this current cast, I highly recommend it. And again, it was a very easy like walk up, get tickets, and if you want in advance, you can do same day on TKTS for whatever, more discounted. We did get Into the Woods tickets that morning. I did not go to TKTS because after I went to Almost Famous on Friday and we got tickets at the theater, I went to the box office to find out if they had a rush because I know it's not listed anywhere, but like, this is maybe a pro tip. Sometimes theaters don't put their policies on, but they will always sell you cheaper orchestra tickets day of show. I did not know that this was the case for Into the Woods because obviously, like, Into the Woods has been insane since it transferred and everyone's been trying to see it. But there were 3 seats. We did have to sit separately, so 2 and then 1. Mm-hmm. I thought they were second row seats. They were first row seats, which was wild. And that was a crazy experience. I will talk about Into the Woods a little bit more in a minute. If you're sitting in the first 2 rows, you have to wear a mask in the theater.
Oh, that's great.
Which is like totally fine, but like keep in mind. And they do come down to tell you if you're not wearing a mask that you need to wear a mask during the performance. Yeah. So I think it's only those first 2 rows.
I'm not sure if they're like unclaimed.
Yes. Although they're like spitting all over me. So like, well, whatever.
You consented to that.
Yeah, by purchasing the ticket, I consented to Sebastian Arcelus' spit. So that's fine. And then on Sunday, we did not see a show in the afternoon, but it just so happened that Moulin Rouge had a Sunday night show. And it was actually my brother Tyler that had seen Moulin Rouge in July with my parents, but we wanted Corey to see it after he saw Anne Juliet because he wanted to see it as... We've been calling it in my house the trifecta of Anne Juliet, 6, and Moulin Rouge. And the last trip we saw 6, we saw Anne Juliet together, and then we wanted to see Moulin Rouge. And we got sateen seats. I will say hard.
On Today Ticks?
Hard.
It's on Today Ticks, right?
On the app. You can only do it on the app. You can't do it on the Today Ticks website.
I signed up for alerts because I wanted to like watch the countdown. It counts you down from like 1 minute to zero, and I wanted that like exact zero moment so I could click in exactly when I needed to. Mm-hmm. There was a Sunday matinee show, so we were trying for both, but I wanted to see the night show just because, to me, I think we've discussed this before, but like Moulin Rouge is a night show.
I agree.
I did go to the theater the day before to ask if they had like same day discounted tickets like Into the Woods, and the guy was like, yeah, no, we don't do that. And Moulin Rouge for the night was not on TKTS because there was only like 4 tickets available, because again, it was like one of like 3 Sunday night shows.
Right.
Now, as everyone knows, I love the show. I don't think I've seen a better version of Moulin Rouge since Boston than what I saw last Sunday night.
Wow, that's high praise. That's quite high praise.
And I don't know why. It was just so good. I feel like, and I don't know that this always happens, but like it was their 9th show of the week, which is wild. 9 That's shows funny. On that. I did not see Ashley Lauren. I saw her standby, which I don't have the playbill with me. I'm so sorry. So I don't know the name off of the top of her head, off the top of my head. I do want to say though, I saw on Instagram, and I don't know if you know this, but do you know that in the Satine dressing room, there's a neon sign that says A Bit More Rouge?
I did not know that. That's amazing.
And I feel like we need it. Like, for life.
You know, I've been thinking about a neon sign and what it should say, and maybe it's a bit more rouge. A bit more rouge. I can only hear, Danny Burstein saying it. A bit more rouge.
I just need to say that Eric Anderson, born to play Zipper.
My parents loved him
as well. I knew this before, like, when we heard that he was replacing Danny, we were like, perfect casting. Yeah. Like, you couldn't have a perfect casting. Show 9, sometimes you can get, like, I don't know, it's hard because this is a full, like, balls-to-the-wall show. Derek Klena left everything on that stage. And for this role, I think it's necessary to leave everything on that stage. His Roxanne was insane. Insane. Like, I had heard bootlegs on Twitter, and I was like, oh, I don't know. It's an octave down. It's no Aaron Tveit. He, like, wiped the floor with Aaron. I was shocked at that performance. Even Tyler was like, who had seen it a couple months before, was like, he was so much better tonight than he was when I saw it.
Oh, wow.
So, maybe, like, 9th show is Derek Klena's prime. He's a new dad. I just feel like everything.
Did they have the baby? Did they have the baby?
They have the baby.
Oh, I didn't even see Dax. Dax? His name is Dax. Cute. I didn't know that. Yeah. You know, he settled into it. You know, you need some time to get used to it, to get your body used to doing it. Like, it makes sense. When my parents saw it, they liked him, but they really liked Ashley Lauren. I was like, oh, okay. And they really liked Eric Anderson. They're like, he's the best. Yeah. He's amazing. I'm like, absolutely. We knew. He's great.
Ashley Lauren's been out because she has Lyme disease. So she hasn't been able to perform as often. So she's not doing 2-show days for like the foreseeable future. And I think like sometimes she'll just randomly call out on a weekday because like she's trying to get her body like back to
absolutely
being able to perform in this insane of a show. But like the only thing I will say is I missed Ricky a lot. I think no one beats Ricky's Santiago. Like, nobody. I love, like, Robin Herter's presence, but, like, the new Nini is great, too. It was understudy Duke, but he's been in the show from, like, the very beginning, so he held his own. But I do miss Tam. I love Tam. Like,
Tam
something
had
about
presence.
Him.
He had presence.
Something about him. Yeah, but, like, Sar was still in it, so I saw Sar again. So he's been there forever.
We saw him in Boston. Like, it's been years.
That show is just, like, the highest quality to me of, like, camp, yes, but also, like, they're working so hard. That ensemble is working so hard. Backstage Romance, better than ever. Like, better than ever. And, we had a good audience that night, too, which is, like, really exciting when the audience is great. But, like, truly, I am shocked by the performance that Derek gave. And I've seen him perform, like, a few times now, but never did I expect this from him. And now it's like, oh my God, I need to like see that again. But at the same time, I don't want to, like, his performance will live in my head forever of like how much he poured everything out there. You know what I didn't appreciate? I feel like this is actually turning into like the obsession. I'm so sorry. I haven't even talked about what I'm actually obsessed with this week. I've never appreciated until like this moment on my fourth viewing, the chandelier to Roxanne transition.
Wow. Wow. It is
amazing. Amazing.
Do you remember when chandelier originally
had like, everyone, of course I remember.
When it was everyone dressed as the green fairy that would like,
yes,
they all came down kind of dressed like sateen as the green fairy and like
were all the like female dancers. Christian.
Yeah, it was great.
I will never be over it. I could see Moulin Rouge every single day of my life. Like, it's just that much of a blast. But sateen seats are in the mezzanine if you're interested. $55, which I think is well worth it for that show. And it does seem to be, like, readily available on TKTS. So there's that. Okay. 15 minutes later. My obsession of the week is the Into the Woods cast recording came out. It is not the cast I saw, but it's the original cast. And my favorite song...
Except for Sarah. She was out.
And my favorite song is It Takes Two, which Sarah Bareilles and Brian D'Arcy James sings.
Not just surviving, you're blossoming in the woods. At home, I'd fear we'd stay the same forever. Charming, considerate, clever.
It takes one to begin, but then once you've begun, it takes two of you. It's no fun.
But what needs to be. Here's what I'll say. I thought, and we've discussed this like very briefly, I think that Into the Woods, because this is not like a fully state. Like, you can't compare this to a Moulin Rouge. There's no set.
No, no, no.
There's no like spectacle. It's basically like a reading that is with the best of the best, I would say.
I would say it's minimalist staging. They don't have scripts, so it's not a reading or a workshop, but it's extremely minimal. Yes. No set changes.
No set changes, barely any like set movement. Yeah, they just like sway a bit. There's like giant boots, obviously star of it's our like lives, puppet. Milky White. That's
yeah, the beanstalk is, like, the beanstalk set comes up, but it does feel very like community theater style beanstalk.
Yes.
In like, which a good way. In a like, yeah, like sometimes community theater style, like it looks like a painted piece of wood. It yes. worked for the way this production was. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. Anyway, I just feel like, and we've discussed this and you feel the same way, that this just felt like the highest caliber of like theater I've seen in a very long time.
Yes.
I don't mean this in like a negative way, but like no one was acting. They were just doing it. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel anything. So the cast that I saw was like Stephanie J. Black and her husband, Sebastian Arcellus, who, like, what a duo. She is a legend. We know I am obsessed with her. And that's why I think it's so interesting that, like, this version on the cast recording with Sarah is such a different take. Sarah has such a different voice to Stephanie.
It's so much like softer versus like
it's so harder. Stunning. Sarah's is so stunning. Yes, so Stephanie has a hard voice, but like in a great way.
Yeah, she has
she's
more
so powerful,
like natural attitude when she sings. Like
yeah, and just like watching the two of them play married couple as a real life married couple, like brought so much joy to me. I love her so much. I will see her in anything. Other than that, like, stand out to me, which I texted you, Krista Rodriguez as Cinderella.
That's so interesting.
We are fans, but we are also, sometimes I don't love the way that her voice sounds on certain things. Yeah. And this hit her sweet spot. She sounded amazing.
That's great.
And I love, like, her acting choices. And you said maybe it's the character because, like,
to me,
you loved
like, Philippa Sue was the star. So it's funny that we both picked the same character, but different actresses playing it.
Yeah. Obviously, Gavin Creel and Josh Henry are killing the audience every single time they're on stage.
Now it's Andy Carl.
I know. Yeah. No, and then Kennedy as Milky White, just like bringing the house down on a daily basis.
Did you watch the stage door? Because that was actually maybe one of my top experiences of that night. Okay. I think I said about on the podcast before, but basically we just stood across the street and watched the stage door for Into the Woods. And they're not proper stage dooring, but they basically created with barriers like a hallway or a path out of the door to the street. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of black cars waiting. So people are waiting on either side of the barrier. And someone will walk out. It's
very Music Man stage door.
They will wave. They will wave. They'll wave. They'll get directly into the black car. And then they will peace out. They'll like wave from the window. So every person this happened to, they'd be like, oh, who's coming out? Oh, it's Ryan Darcy James. Wave, wave, wave. Get into the car. Wave.
This is how you know that it's like the best of Broadway. Because the only other times I've seen this is like... Plaza Suite with Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker like literally walking into SUV, and then like If Then Idina Menzel like waving and walking into an SUV. So like it was only the top tier.
It was honestly iconic the way that it was happening. Yeah. It was amazing. And mom's like, who's that? And I'm like, okay, this is this person. And then my favorite part of it was that the actor who plays Jack, he just walked away. He didn't get a car.
Aww. I loved him. I thought his Giants in the Sky was so beautiful. And also someone, I don't have their name off the top of my head, but the guy that plays the narrator.
Yeah, amazing. I don't have his name either. Yeah, we loved him
amazing.
As well.
Love, he was so good, so funny. But yeah, Milky White's death scene was truly the greatest moment on stage that I've seen in a long time. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. But yeah, so my obsession this week is It Takes Two. And then, you know, to round out my New York trip, the highest caliber of theater, seeing WWE Monday Night Raw. So you can get any better than that.
If you had to rank, including Raw, what was what my weekend? Ranking be? Yeah.
Whoa.
From bottom to top.
Can I even like rank two of these shows? I've seen them so many times. I guess, like, off of experience.
The experience of this particular weekend.
Honestly, and, like, I don't know that I would always do this, but, like, Moulin Rouge is number one for me because of, like, that experience and that performance. Wild. Number two, Into the Woods, for sure. Number three, Phantom. Number four, Raw. Number five, Almost Famous.
WWE, you Raw. Better than Almost Famous.
I love you, Chris Wood. I love you, Soleil Pfeiffer. And honestly, Casey Likes, you're killing it in your Broadway debut. But this show?
What about Drew Gaelic? What about Drew Gaelic?
Oh my God, sorry. Drew Gaelic, truly the star of Almost Famous. Okay. He is playing the most different role than he's maybe ever played in his entire life.
It's no Dr.
And he's serving comedy.
He's serving comedy.
You know who's also great? Gerard. I don't know how to say his last name.
Canonical?
But like, yeah, great.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm happy.
But other than that,
it's giving.
I hope their preview process, they get to fix things. But I did, Theater's Life on TikTok did say that it is worse now than it was in San Diego. And that's not a good sign.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my trip to New York. Oh, and before we like truly wrap up this episode, what was very thrilling to me was the Anne Juliet signage at the Stephen Sondheim Theater.
At the Sondheim. When I was there, it was still Doubtfire, so that's...
And when I was leaving was the first day of their rehearsal, so they're...
Aww. Yeah, they're in tech
right
now.
Oh my God, they'll be open. They're in previews right now on episode release. So if you're in the New York area, go see Anne Juliet. Yeah, and then give us your hierarchy of Moulin Rouge, Anne Juliet, and Six, because I'm interested. I won't bore you with any more New York information. Our next episode is actually our 100th episode, which is wild. We don't know what we're doing for it.
Probably just a normal episode at this point.
When it comes out. So for that, you can listen to all 99 or 98 of our other episodes, because this would be our 99th, by subscribing to our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it if you left us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also subscribe to us here on YouTube.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @Off2BOAPodcast with the number 2, and tell us how you really feel about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I think we held back today.
Did we? I don't think we held back. And we will see you guys next time for our 100th episode.
Bye.